The Rubaiyat of Omar Khayyam, Omar Khayyam. Listen to and download free AI-generated audiobooks at 3ords.com. The Project Gutenberg ebook of The Rubaiyat of Omar Khayyam. This ebook is for the use of anyone anywhere in the United States and most other parts of the world at no cost and with almost no restrictions whatsoever. You may copy it, give it away, or reuse it under the terms of the Project Gutenberg license included with this ebook or online. www.gutenberg.org. If you are not located in the United States, you will have to check the laws of the country where you are located before using this ebook. Title: The Rubaiyat of Omar Khayyam. Author: Omar Khayyam. Translator: Edward Fitzgerald. Release date: April 1, 1995. Ebook 246. Most recently updated: July 9, 2025. Language: English. Other information and formats: www.gutenberg.org/ebook/246. Credits: produced by Judy Boss, Gregory Walker, and David Widger. Asterisk: start of the project GUTMBRGBOOK, the RUBAIYAT of OMARKHAYYAM. Asterisk: Rubaiyat of OMARKHAYYAM by Omar Khayyam, rendered into English verse by Edward Fitzgerald. Contents: introduction, footnotes, first edition, fifth edition, notes, introduction. Omar Khayyam, the astronomer poet of Persia. Omar Khayyam was born at Naishapur in Khorasan in the latter half of our 11th, and died within the first quarter of our 12th century. The slender story of his life is curiously twined about that of two other very considerable figures in their time and country, one of whom tells the story of all three. This was Nizam-ul-Mulk, vizier to Alp Arslan the son, and Malik Shah the grandson of Toghrul Beg the Tartar, who had wrested Persia from the feeble successor of Mahmud the Great and founded that Seljukian dynasty which finally roused Europe into the Crusades. This Nizam-ul-Mulk, in his wasiyat, or testament, which he wrote and left as a memorial for future statesmen, relates the following as quoted in the Calcutta Review, No. 59, from Mir Khan's History of the Assassins. One of the greatest of the wise men of Khorasan was the Imam Mowafak of Naishapur, a man highly honored and reverenced, may God rejoice. His soul, his illustrious years exceeded 85, and it was the universal belief that every boy who read the Quran or studied the traditions in his presence would assuredly attain to honor and happiness. For this cause did my father send me from Tus to Naishapur with Abdus Samad, the doctor of law, that I might employ myself in study and learning under the guidance of that illustrious teacher. Towards me he ever turned an eye of favor and kindness, and as his pupil I felt for him extreme affection and devotion, so that I passed 4 years in his service. When I first came there, I found two other pupils of mine own age, newly arrived, Hakim Omar Khayyam and the ill-fated Ben Saba. Both were endowed with sharpness of wit and the highest natural powers, and we three formed a close friendship together. When the Imam rose from his lectures, they used to join me, and we repeated to each other the lessons we had heard. Now Omar was a native of Naishapur, while Hassan Ben Saba's father was one Ali, a man of austere life and practice, but heretical in his creed and doctrine. One day Hassan said to me and to Khayyam, "It is a universal belief that the pupils of the Imam Mowafak will attain to fortune. Now, even if we all do not attain thereto, without doubt one of us will. What then shall be our mutual pledge and bond?" We answered, "Be it what you please." "Well," he said, "let us make a vow that to whomsoever this fortune falls, he shall share it equally with the rest, and reserve no preeminence for himself." "Be it so," we both replied, and on those terms we mutually pledged our words. Years rolled on, and I went from Khorasan to Transoxiana and wandered to Ghazni and Kabul, and when I returned, I was invested with office and rose to be administrator of affairs during the Sultanate of Sultan Alp Arslan. He goes on to state that years passed by, and both his old school friends found him out and came and claimed a share in his good fortune, according to the school day vow. The vizier was generous and kept his word. Hassan demanded a place in the government, which the Sultan granted, at the vizier's request, but discontented with a gradual rise, he plunged into the maze of intrigue of an Oriental court, and failing in a base attempt to supplant his benefactor, he was disgraced and fell. After many mishaps and wanderings, Hassan became the head of the Persian sect of the Ismailians, a party of fanatics who had long murmured in obscurity, but rose to an evil eminence under the guidance of his strong and evil will. In AD 1090, he seized the castle of Alamut in the province of Rudbar, which lies in the mountainous tract south of the Caspian Sea, and It was from this mountain home he obtained that evil celebrity among the Crusaders as the old man of the Mountains, and spread terror through the Mohammedan world. And it is yet disputed where the word assassin, which they have left in the language of modern Europe as their dark memorial, is derived from the hashish or opiate of hemp leaves, the Indian bhang, with which they maddened themselves to the sullen pitch of Oriental desperation, or from the name of the founder of the dynasty, whom we have seen in his quiet collegiate days at Naishapur, one of the countless victims of the assassin's dagger was Nizam-ul-Mulk himself, the old schoolboy friend one. Omar Khayyam also came to the vizier to claim his share, but not to ask for title or office. "The greatest boon you can confer on me," he said, "is to let me live in a corner under the shadow of your fortune to spread wide the advantages of science and pray for your long life and prosperity." The vizier tells us that when he found Omar was really sincere in his refusal, he pressed him no further, but granted him a yearly pension of 1,200 mithkals of gold from the treasury of Naishapur. At Naishapur thus lived and died Omar Khayyam, busied, adds the vizier, in winning knowledge of every kind, and especially in astronomy, wherein he attained to a very high preeminence. Under the Sultanate of Malik Shah, he came to Merv and obtained great praise for his proficiency in science, and the Sultan showered favors upon him. When the Malik Shah determined to reform the calendar, Omar was one of the 8 learned men employed to do it. The result was the Jalali era, so called from Jalaluddin, one of the king's names, a computation of time, says Gibbon, which surpasses the Julian and approaches the accuracy of the Gregorian style. He is also the author of some astronomical tables entitled Zijimalik Shahi, and the French have lately republished and translated an Arabic treatise of his on algebra. His takhalis or poetical name, Khayyam, signifies a tent maker, and he is said to have at one time exercised that trade, perhaps before Nizam-ul-Mulk's generosity raised him to independence. Many Persian poets similarly derive their names from their occupations. Thus we have Adar, a druggist, Asar, an oil presser, etc. To Omar himself alludes to his name in the following whimsical lines: Khayyam, who stitched the tents of science, has fallen in grief's furnace and been suddenly burned. The shears of fate have cut the tent ropes of his life, and the broker of hope has sold him for nothing. We have only one more anecdote to give of his life, and that relates to the close. It is told in the anonymous preface, which is sometimes prefixed to his poems. It has been printed in the Persian in the appendix to Hyde's Veterum Persarum Religio, p. 499, and de Herbelot alludes to it in his Bibliotheque under Khayyam. 3. It is written in the chronicles of the ancients that this king of the wise Omar Khayyam died at Naishapur in the year of the Hegira, 517 AD 1123. In science, he was unrivaled, the very paragon of his age. Khwaja Nizami of Samarkand, who was one of his pupils, relates the following story. "I often used to hold conversations with my teacher, Omar Khayyam, in a garden, and one day he said to me, 'My tomb shall be in a spot where the north wind may scatter roses over it.' I wondered at the words he spake, but I knew that his were no idle words, for years after, when I chanced to revisit Naishapur, I went to his final resting place, and lo, it was just outside a garden, and trees laden with fruit stretched their boughs over the garden wall and dropped their flowers upon his tomb, so that the stone was hidden under them." Thus far, without fear of trespass, from the Calcutta Review, the writer of it, on reading in India this story of Omar's grave, was reminded, he says, of Cicero's account of finding Archimedes' tomb at Syracuse, buried in grass and weeds. I think Thorwaldsen desired to have roses grow over him, a wish religiously fulfilled for him to the present day, I believe. However, to return to Omar, though the Sultan showered favors upon him, Omar's Epicurean audacity of thought and speech caused him to be regarded askance in his own time and country. He is said to have been especially hated and dreaded by the Sufis, whose practice he ridiculed and whose faith amounts to little more than his own, when stripped of the mysticism and formal recognition of Islamism under which Omar would not hide. Their poets, including Hafiz, who are, with the exception of Ferdowsi, the most considerable in Persia, borrowed largely indeed of Omar's material, but turning it to a mystical use more convenient to themselves and the people they addressed, a people quite as quick of doubt as of belief, as keen of bodily sense as of intellectual, and delighting in a cloudy composition of both, in which they could float luxuriously between heaven and earth and this world and the next on the wings of a poetical expression that might serve indifferently for either. Omar was too honest of heart as well of head for this. having failed, however mistakenly, of finding any providence but destiny and any world but this, he set about making the most of it, preferring rather to soothe the soul through the senses into acquiescence with things as he saw them than to perplex it with vain disquietude after what they might be. It has been seen, however, that his worldly ambition was not exorbitant, and he very likely takes a humorous or perverse pleasure in exalting the gratification of sense above that of the intellect, in which he must have taken great delight, although it failed, to answer the questions in which he, in common with all men, was most vitally interested. For whatever reason, however, Omar, as before said, has never been popular in his own country and therefore has been but scantily transmitted abroad. The MSS of his poems, mutilated beyond the average casualties of Oriental transcription, are so rare in the East as scarce to have reeked westward at all, in spite of all the acquisitions of arms and science. There is no copy at the India House, none at the Bibliothèque Nationale of Paris. We know but of one in England, number 140 of the Auseli MSS, at the Bodleian, written at Shiraz, AD 1460. This contains but 158 rubaiyat, one in the Asiatic Society's library at Calcutta, of which we have a copy, contains, and yet incomplete, 516, though swelled to that by all kinds of repetition and corruption. So von Hammer speaks of his copy as containing about 200, while Dr. Sprenger catalogues the Lucknow MS. at double that number, 5, the scribes, 2 of the Oxford and Calcutta MSS, seem to do their work under a sort of protest, each beginning with a tetrastick, whether genuine or not, taken out of its alphabetical order, the Oxford with one of apology, the Calcutta with one of expostulation, supposed, says a notice prefixed to the MS, to have arisen from a dream in which Omar's mother asked about his future fate. It may be rendered thus: O thou who burn'st in heart for those who burn, in hell whose fires thyself shall feed in turn, how long be crying, mercy on them, God? Why, who art thou to teach and he to learn? The Bodleian quatrain pleads pantheism by way of justification. If I myself upon a looser creed have loosely strung the jewel of good deed, let this one thing for my atonement plead, that one for two I never did misread. The reviewer, 6, to whom I owe the particulars of Omar's life, concludes his review by comparing him with Lucretius, both as to natural temper and genius, and as acted upon by the circumstances in which he lived. Both indeed were men of subtle, strong, and cultivated intellect, fine imagination, and hearts, passionate for truth and justice, who justly revolted from their countries false religion and false or foolish devotion to it, but who fell short of replacing what they subverted by such better hope as others, with no better revelation to guide them, had yet made a law to themselves. Lucretius, indeed, with such material as Epicurus furnished, satisfied himself with the theory of a vast machine fortuitously constructed, and acting by a law that implied no legislator, and so composing himself into a stoical rather than Epicurean severity of attitude, sat down to contemplate the mechanical drama of the universe which he was part actor in, himself and all about him, as in his own sublime description of the Roman theater, discolored with the lurid reflex of the curtain suspended between the spectator and the sun. Omar, more desperate or more careless of any so complicated system as resulted in nothing but hopeless necessity, flung his own genius and learning with a bitter or humorous jest into the general ruin which their insufficient glimpses only served to reveal, and pretending sensual pleasure as the serious purpose of life, only diverted himself with speculative problems of deity, destiny, matter and spirit, good and evil, and other such questions, easier to start than to run down, and the pursuit of which becomes a very weary sport at last, with regard to the present translation. The original rubaiyat as missing. An Arabic guttural, these tetrasticks are more musically called, are independent stanzas, consisting each of 4 lines of equal, though varied prosody, sometimes all rhyming, but oftener, as here imitated, the 3rd line a blank. Somewhat as in the Greek Alcaic, where the penultimate line seems to lift and suspend the wave that falls over in the last. As usual with such kind of Oriental verse, the rubaiyat follow one another, according to alphabetic rhyme, a strange succession of grave and gay. Those here selected are strung into something of an eclogue, with perhaps a less than equal proportion of the drink and make merry, which genuine or not recurs over frequently in the original. Either way, the result is sad enough, saddest perhaps when most ostentatiously merry, more apt to move sorrow than anger toward the old tent maker, who, after vainly endeavoring to unshackle his steps from destiny and to catch some authentic glimpse of tomorrow, fell back upon today, which has outlasted so many tomorrows, as the only ground he had got to stand upon, however, momentarily slipping from under his feet, from the third edition. While the second edition of this version of Omar was preparing, Monsieur Nicolas, French consul at Resht, published a very careful and very good edition of the text from a lithograph copy at Tehran, comprising 464 rubaiyat with translation and notes of his own Mons. Nicolas, whose edition has reminded me of several things and instructed me and others, does not consider Omar to be the material Epicurean that I have literally taken him for, but a mystic, shadowing the deity under the figure of wine, wine-bearer, and sea, as Hafiz is supposed to do. In short, a Sufi poet like Hafiz and the rest. I cannot see reason to alter my opinion, formed as it was more than a dozen years ago when Omar was first shown me by one to whom I am indebted for all I know of Oriental and very much of other literature. He admired Omar's genius so much that he would gladly have adopted any such interpretation of his meaning as Mons. Nicolas, if he could, 7, that he could not, appears by his paper in the Calcutta Review already so largely quoted, in which he argues from the poems themselves as well as from what records remain of the poet's life, and if more were needed to disprove Mons. Nicolas' theory, there is the biographical notice which he himself has drawn up in direct contradiction to the interpretation of the poems given in his notes. See pp. 13-14 of his preface. Indeed, I hardly knew poor Omar was so far gone till his apologist informed me. For here we see that whatever were the wine that Hafiz drank and sang, the veritable juice of the grape it was which Omar used, not only when carousing with his friends, but says Mons, Nicolas, in order to excite himself to that pitch of devotion which others reached, by cries and hurlements. And yet, whenever wine, wine-bearer, and sea occur in the text, which is often enough Mons, Nicolas carefully annotates dia, la divinite, and sea, so carefully indeed, that one is tempted to think that he was indoctrinated by the Sufi with whom he read the poems. Note to Rub, Roman 2, p. 8. A Persian would naturally wish to vindicate a distinguished countryman, and a Sufi to enroll him in his own sect, which already comprises all the chief poets of Persia. What historical authority has Mons Nicolas to show that Omar gave himself up avec passion à l'étude de la philosophie des Sufis? Preface, p. Roman 13. The doctrines of pantheism, materialism, necessity, and sea were not peculiar to the Sufi, nor to Lucretius before them, nor to Epicurus before him, probably the very original irreligion of thinking men from the first, and very likely to be the spontaneous growth of a philosopher. Living in an age of social and political barbarism, under shadow of one of the 270 religions supposed to divide the world. Von Hammer, according to Sprenger's Oriental Catalogue, speaks of Omar as a freethinker and a great opponent of Sufism, perhaps because, while holding much of their doctrine, he would not pretend to any inconsistent severity of morals. Sir W. Ouseli has written a note to something of the same effect on the flyleaf of the Bodleian MS. And in two rubaiyat of Mons, Nicolas' own edition, Suf and Sufi are both disparagingly named. No doubt many of these quatrains seem unaccountable unless mystically interpreted, but many more as unaccountable unless literally. Were the wine spiritual, for instance, how wash the body with it when dead? Why make cups of the dead clay to be filled with la divinite by some succeeding mystic? Mons Nicolas himself is puzzled by some bazaars and trop-orientals, illusions and images, dune sensualite quelquefois, revoltante indeed, which less convenances do not permit him to translate, but still which the reader cannot but refer to la divinite. 8. No doubt also many of the quatrains in the Tehran, as in the Calcutta, copies are spurious, such rubaiyat being the common form of epigram in Persia. But this, at best, tells as much one way as another, nay, the Sufi, who may be considered the scholar and man of letters in Persia, would be far more likely than the careless epicure to interpolate what favors his own view of the poet. I observed that very few of the more mystical quatrains are in the Bodleian MS, which must be one of the oldest, as dated at Shiraz, AH 865, AD 1460. And this, I think, especially distinguishes Omar. I cannot help calling him by his, no, not Christian, familiar name from all other Persian poets, that, whereas with them the poet is lost in his song, the man in allegory and abstraction, we seem to have the man, the Bonhomme Omar, himself with all his humors and passions, as frankly before us as if we were really at table with him after the wine had gone round. I must say that I, for one, never wholly believed in the mysticism of Hafiz. It does not appear there was any danger in holding and singing Sufi. Pantheism, so long as the poet made his salam to Mohammed at the beginning and end of his song. Under such conditions, Jalaluddin, Jami, Attar, and others sang, using wine and beauty indeed as images to illustrate, not as a mask to hide, the divinity they were celebrating. Perhaps some allegory less liable to mistake or abuse had been better, among so inflammable a people. Much more so when, as some think with Hafiz and Omar, the abstract is not only likened to, but identified with the sensual image, hazardous, if not to the devotee himself, yet to his weaker brethren, and worse for the profane in proportion as the devotion of the initiated grew warmer. And all for what? To be tantalized with images of sensual enjoyment, which must be renounced if one would approximate a god, who, according to the doctrine, is sensual matter as well as spirit, and into whose universe one expects unconsciously to merge after death. Without hope of any posthumous beatitude in another world to compensate for all one's self-denial in this. Lucretius, blind divinity certainly, merited and probably got as much self-sacrifice as this of the Sufi, and the burden of Omar's song, if not let us eat, is assuredly, let us drink, for tomorrow we die. And if Hafiz meant quite otherwise by a similar language, he surely miscalculated when he devoted his life and genius to so equivocal a psalmody as from his day to this has been said, and sung by any rather than spiritual worshippers. However, as there is some traditional presumption, and certainly the opinion of some learned men, in favor of Omar's being a Sufi, and even something of a saint, those who please may so interpret his wine and cupbearer. On the other hand, as there is far more historical certainty of his being a philosopher of scientific insight and ability, far beyond that of the age and country he lived in, of such moderate worldly ambition as becomes a philosopher and such moderate wants as rarely satisfy a debauchee, other readers may be content to believe with me that, while the wine Omar celebrates is simply the juice of the grape, he bragged more than he drank of it in very defiance perhaps of that spiritual wine which left its votaries sunk in hypocrisy or disgust. Edward J. Fitzgerald, footnotes, 1, return. Some of Omar's Rubaiyat warn us of the danger of greatness, the instability of fortune, and while advocating charity to all men, recommending us to be too intimate with none. Adder makes Nizam-ul-Mulk use the very words of his friend Omar, Rub, Roman 28. When Nizam-ul-Mulk was in the agony of death, he said, O God, I am passing away in the hand of the wind. 2, return. Though all these, like our Smiths, Archers, Millers, Fletchers, etc., may simply retain the surname of an hereditary calling. 3, return. Philosoph musulman qui a vequen odour de sainte dans sa religion, vers la fin du premier et le commencement du second siècle, no part of which, except the philosoph, can apply to our Khayyam. 4, return. The rashness of the words, according to de Herbelot, consisted in being so opposed to those in the Quran, no man knows where he shall die. Story of Omar reminds me of another so naturally, and when one remembers how wide of his humble mark the noble sailor aimed, so pathetically told by Captain Cook, not by Dr. Hawkworth, in his second voyage, I-374. When leaving Ulaetia, Oreo's last request was for me to return. When he saw he could not obtain that promise, he asked the name of my marae, burying place. As strange a question as this was, I hesitated not a moment to tell him Stepney, the parish in which I live when in London. I was made to repeat it several times over till they could pronounce it, and then Stepney Marae no toot was echoed through 100 mouths at once. I afterwards found the same question had been put to Mr. Forster by a man on shore, but he gave a different, and indeed more proper answer by saying, no man who used the sea could say where he should be buried. 5, return. Since this paper was written, adds the reviewer in a note, we have met with a copy of a very rare edition, printed at Calcutta in 1836. This contains 438 tetrasticks. An appendix containing 54 others not found in some MSS. 6, return. Professor Cowell. 7, return. Perhaps would have edited the poems himself some years ago. He may now as little approve of my version on one side as of Mons, Nicola's theory on the other. 8, return. A note to Quatrain 234 admits that, however clear the mystical meaning of such images must be to Europeans, they are not quoted without raugescent, even by laymen in Persia, quant aux termes de tendresse qui commencent si Quatrain Comitant daughters dans si recuil, nos lecteurs habitus maintenant a. One étrangit des expressions si souvent employees par cam pour render. Ses pensées sur l'amour divin, et à la singularite des images trop, orientales, d'une sensualite quelquefois revoltante, en orant pas de pain. A si persuader quil est sagit de la divinite, bien que cette conviction soit. Vivement discuti par les moles musulmans, et meme par beaucoup de lakes qui rougissent veritablement d'une peril licence de lure, compatriote à one égard des choses spirituals. First edition, I awake. For morning in the bowl of night, has flung the stone that puts the stars to flight, and lo, the hunter of the east has caught the sultan's turret in a noose of light. Roman too, dreaming when dawn's left hand was in the sky, I heard a voice within the tavern cry. Awake, my little ones, and fill the cup, before life's liquor in its cup be dry. Roman 3, and as the cock crew, those who stood before the tavern shouted, open then the door, you know how little while we have to stay, and once departed may return no more. Roman 4, now the new year reviving old desires, the thoughtful soul to solitude retires, where the white hand of Moses on the bough puts out and Jesus from the ground suspires. V, Iram indeed is gone with all its rose. And Jamshid's seven-ringed cup where no one knows, but still the vine her ancient ruby yields, and still a garden by the water blows. Vi and David's lips are locked, but in divine, high-piping Pelavi with wine, 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 red wine. The nightingale cries to the rose, that yellow cheek of hers tyne carnadine, Roman 7. Come, fill the cup, and in the fire of spring, the winter garment of repentance fling, the bird of time has but a little way to fly, and lo, the bird is on the wing, Roman 8. And look, a thousand blossoms with the day, woke, and a thousand scattered into clay, and this first summer month that brings the rose, shall take Jamshid and Kaikabad away, Roman 9. But come with old Kayam, and leave the lot of Kaikabad and Kaikasru forgot, let Rustum lay about him as he will, or hate him tie cry supper, heed them not. X. With me along some strip of herbage strown, that just divides the desert from the sown, where name of slave and sultan scarce is known. And pity Sultan Mahmud on his throne, Roman 11, here with a loaf of bread beneath the bough, a flask of wine, a book of verse, and thou, beside me singing in the wilderness. And wilderness is paradise eno, Roman 12. How sweet is mortal sovereignty. Think some others, how blessed the paradise to come. Ah, take the cash in hand and wave the rest, oh, the brave music of a distant drum, Roman 13, look to the rose that blows about us. Lo. Laughing, she says, into the world I blow at once the silken tassel of my purse tear and its treasure on the garden throw. Roman 14, the worldly hope men set their hearts upon turns ashes or it prospers, and anon, like snow upon the desert's dusty face, lighting a little hour or two is gone, Roman 15, and those who husbanded the golden grain and those who flung it to the winds like rain, alike to no such aureate earth are turned, as buried once men want dug up again, Roman 16. Think in this battered caravanserai, whose doorways are alternate night and day, how sultan after sultan with his pomp abode his hour or two and went his way, Roman 17. They say the lion and the lizard keep the courts where Jamshid gloried and drank deep, and Bahram, that great hunter, the wild ass, stamps o'er his head and he lies fast asleep. Roman 18. I sometimes think that never blows so red the rose as where some buried Caesar bled, that every hyacinth the garden wears, dropped in its lap from some once lovely head, Roman 19, and this delightful herb whose tender green fledges the river's lip on which we lean. Ah, lean upon it lightly, for who knows from what once lovely lip it springs unseen, Roman 20. Ah, my beloved, fill the cup that clears today of past regrets and future fears, tomorrow. Why, tomorrow I may be myself with yesterday's 7,000 years, Roman 21. Lo, some we loved, the loveliest and the best, that time and fate of all their vintage pressed, have drunk their cup a round or two before, and one by one crept silently to rest. Roman 22, and we that now make merry in the room, they left, and summer dresses in new bloom, ourselves must we beneath the couch of earth descend, ourselves to make a couch for whom, Roman 23, ah, make the most of what we yet may spend, before we too into the dust descend, dust into dust, and under dust to lie. Sans wine, sans song, sans singer, and sans end, Roman 24, alike for those who for today prepare, and those that after a tomorrow stare, a muezzin from the tower of darkness cries. Fools, your reward is neither here nor there. Roman 25. Why, all the saints and sages who discussed of the two worlds so learnedly are thrust, like foolish prophets forth, their words to scorn, are scattered, and their mouths are stopped with dust. Roman 26. Oh, come with old Kayam and leave the wise. To talk, One thing is certain, that life flies, one thing is certain, and the rest is lies, the flower that once has blown forever dies. Roman 27, myself when young did eagerly frequent, doctor and saint and heard great argument, about it and about, but evermore, came out by the same door as in I went. Roman 28, with them the seed of wisdom did I sow, and with my own hand labored it to grow, and this was all the harvest that I reaped. I came like water, and like wind I go. Roman 29, into this universe, and why not knowing, nor whence, like water willy-nilly flowing, and out of it, as wind along the waste. I know not whither, willy-nilly blowing, XXX. What without asking, hither hurried whence, and, without asking, whither hurried hence, another and another cup to drown, the memory of this impertinence, Roman 31, up from earth's center through the seventh gate, I rose, and on the throne of Saturn sate. And many knots unraveled by the road, but not the knot of human death and fate. Roman 32, there was a door to which I found no key, there was a veil past which I could not see, some little talk a while of me and thee, there seemed, and then no more of thee and me. Roman 33, then to the rolling heaven itself I cried, asking, what lamp had destiny to guide, her little children stumbling in the dark, and a blind understanding. Heaven replied, Roman 34. Then to this earthen bowl did I adjourn, my lip the secret well of life to learn, and lip to lip it murmured, while you live, drink, for once dead you never shall return. Roman 35. I think the vessel, that with fugitive articulation answered, once did live and merry make, and the cold lip I kissed. How many kisses might it take and give? Roman 36. For in the marketplace one dusk of day, I watched the potter thumping his wet clay, and with its all obliterated tongue, it murmured, gently, brother, gently pray. Roman 37. Ah, fill the cup. What boots it to repeat? How time is slipping underneath our feet, unborn tomorrow and dead yesterday. Why fret about them if today be sweet? Roman 38, one moment in annihilation's waste, one moment of the well of life to taste. The stars are setting and the caravan starts for the dawn of nothing. Oh, make haste. Roman 39, how long in infinite pursuit of this and that endeavor and dispute? Better be merry with the fruitful grape than sadden after none or bitter fruit. Excel, you know, my friends, how long since in my house? For a new marriage I did make carouse, divorced old barren reason from my bed, and took the daughter of the vine to spouse. Roman 41, for is and is not though with rule and line, and a pan d-o-w-n without I could define, I yet in all I only cared to know, was never deep in anything but wine. Roman 42, and lately by the tavern door agape, came stealing through the dusk an angel shape, bearing a vessel on his shoulder, and he bid me taste of it, and twas the grape. Roman 43, the grape that can with logic absolute the 270 jarring sex confute, the subtle alchemist that in a trice life's leaden metal into gold transmute. Roman 44, the mighty Mahmud, the victorious lord, that all the misbelieving and black horde of fears and sorrows that infest the soul scatters and slays with his enchanted sword. Roman 45, but leave the wise to wrangle, and with me the quarrel of the universe let be, and in some corner of the hubbub couched make game of that which makes as much of thee. Roman 46, for in and out, above, about, below, tis nothing but a magic shadow show, played in a box whose candle is the sun, round which we phantom figures come and go. Roman 47. And if the wine you drink, the lip you press, end in the nothing all things end in yes, then fancy while thou art but what, thou shalt be nothing, thou shalt not be less. Roman 48, while the rose blows along the river brink, with old Khayyam the ruby vintage drink, and when the angel with his darker draft draws up to thee, take that, and do not shrink, XL Vix. Tis all a checkerboard of nights and days, where destiny with men for pieces plays, hither and thither moves, and mates and slays. And one by one back in the closet lays. L, the ball no question makes of eyes and nose, but right or left as strikes the player goes, and he that tossed thee down into the field. He knows about it all, he knows, lie, the moving finger writes, and having writ, moves on, nor all thy piety nor wit shall lure it back to cancel half a line, nor all thy tears wash out a word of it, leh. And that inverted bowl we call the sky, whereunder crawling co-opt we live and die. Lift not thy hands to it for help for it, rolls impotently on as thou or I, leh, with earth's first clay they did the last man's need, and then of the last harvest sowed the seed, yea, the first morning of creation wrote, what the last dawn of reckoning shall read. Live, I tell thee this, when starting from the goal, over the shoulders of the flaming foal, of Heaven Parwin and Mushtari they flung, in my predestined plot of dust and soul, LV, the vine had struck a fiber, which about. If clings my being, let the Sufi flout of my base metal may be filed a key, that shall unlock the door he howls without, LVI, and this I know, whether the one true light, kindle to love, or wrath consume me quite, one glimpse of it within the tavern caught, better than in the temple lost outright. Elvi, O thou who didst with pitfall and with gin, beset the road I was to wander in, thou wilt not with predestination round, enmesh me and impute my fall to sin. Elvi. O thou who man of baser earth didst make, and who with Eden didst devise the snake, for all the sin wherewith the face of man is blackened, man's forgiveness give and take. Cusa Nama. Book of Pots. Lix, listen again. One evening at the close of Ramazan, ere the better moon arose, in that old potter's shop I stood alone, with the clay population round in rows, LX, and strange to tell, among that earthen lot. Some could articulate, while others not, and suddenly one more impatient cried, "Who is the potter, pray, and who the pot?" LXI, then said another, "Surely not in vain, my substance from the common earth was tan, that he who subtly wrought me into shape should stamp me back to common earth again." Elza, another said, "Why, ne'er a peevish boy would break the bowl from which he drank in joy, shall he that made the vessel in pure love and fancy in an after rage destroy?" LZI. None answered this, but after silence spake, "A vessel of a more ungainly make. They sneer at me for leaning all awry. What did the hand then of the potter shake?" Elziv, said one, "folks of a surly tapster tell, and daub his visage with the smoke of hell. They talk of some strict testing of us. Pish, he's a good fellow, and twill all be well." LXV, then said another with a long-drawn sigh, "My clay with long oblivion is gone dry, but fill me with the old familiar juice. Methinks I might recover by and by." LXVI, so while the vessels one by one were speaking, one spied the little crescent all were seeking, and then they jogged each other, "Brother, brother, hark to the porter's shoulder not a-creaking." LXV, "Ah, with the grape my fading life provide, and wash my body whence the life has died, and in a winding sheet of vine leaf wrapped, so bury me by some sweet garden side." LXVI, "That ev'n my buried ashes such a snare of perfume shall fling up into the air, as not a true believer passing by, but shall be overtaken unaware." Elzix, "Indeed, the idols I have loved so long have done my credit in men's eye much wrong, have drowned my honor in a shallow cup, and sold my reputation for a song." LXX, "Indeed, indeed, repentance oft before I swore, but was I sober when I swore, and then came spring and rose in hand, my threadbare penitence a pieces tore." LXXI, "And much as wine has played the infidel and robbed me of my robe of honor, well, I often wonder what the vintners buy when half so precious as the goods they sell." LXXI, "Alas, that spring should vanish with the rose, that youth's sweet-scented manuscript should close, the nightingale that in the branches sang. Ah, whence and whither flown again, who knows?" LXZI, "Ah, love, could thou and I with fate conspire to grasp this sorry scheme of things entire, would not we shatter it to bits and then remold it nearer to the heart's desire?" LXZIV, "Ah, moon of my delight, who knows thee no wane? The moon of heaven is rising once again. How oft hereafter rising shall she look through this same garden after me in vain?" LXXV, "And when thyself with shining foot shall pass among the guests star-scattered on the grass, and in thy joyous errand reach the spot where I made one, turn down an empty glass, Tamam Shud, 5th edition. I wake, for the sun, who scattered into flight the stars before him from the field of night, drives night along with them from heaven and strikes the sultan's turret with a shaft of light. Roman 2, before the phantom of false morning died, methought a voice within the tavern cried, when all the temple is prepared within, why nods the drowsy worshipper outside? Roman 3, and as the cock crew, those who stood before the tavern shouted, open then the door, you know how little while we have to stay, and once departed may return no more. Roman 4, now the new year reviving old desires, the thoughtful soul to solitude retires, where the white hand of Moses on the bough puts out, and Jesus from the ground suspires. V. Iram indeed is gone with all his rose, and Jamshid's seven-ringed cup where no one knows, but still a ruby kindles in the vine, and many a garden by the water blows. VI, and David's lips are locked, but in divine, high-piping Pehlevi with wine, 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 red wine, the nightingale cries to the rose, that sallow cheek of hers to incarnadine. Roman 7, come, fill the cup, and in the fire of spring your winter garment of repentance fling, the bird of time has but a little way to flutter, and the bird is on the wing. Roman 8, whether at Naishapur or Babylon, whether the cup with sweet or bitter run, the wine of life keeps oozing drop by drop, the leaves of life keep falling one by one. Roman 9, each morn a thousand roses brings, you say, yes, but where leaves the rose of yesterday, and this first summer month that brings the rose, shall take Jamshid and Kaikabad away. X, well, let it take them. What have we to do with Kaikabad the Great, or Kaikhosru? Let Zal and Rustum bluster as they will, or Hatem call to supper, heed not you, Roman 11, with me along the strip of herbage strown, that just divides the desert from the sown, where name of slave and sultan is forgot, and peace to Mahmud on his golden throne, Roman 12, a book of verses underneath the bough, a jug of wine, a loaf of bread, and thou, beside me singing in the wilderness. Oh, wilderness were paradise, Eno, Roman 13. Some for the glories of this world, and some, sigh for the prophet's paradise to come, ah, take the cash and let the credit go. Nor heed the rumble of a distant drum, Roman 14, look to the blowing rose about us. Lo, laughing, she says, into the world I blow, at once the silken tassel of my purse tear and its treasure on the garden throw. Roman 15, and those who husbanded the golden grain, and those who flung it to the winds like rain, alike to no such aureate earth are turned. As buried once, men want dug up again, Roman 16, the worldly hope men set their hearts upon turns ashes or it prospers, and anon, like snow upon the desert's dusty face. Lighting a little hour or two is gone, Roman 17, think in this battered caravanserai, whose portals are alternate night and day, how sultan after sultan with his pomp abode his destined hour and went his way, Roman 18. They say the lion and the lizard keep the courts where Jamshid gloried and drank deep, and Bahram, that great hunter, the wild ass, stamps o'er his head but cannot break his sleep. Roman 19. I sometimes think that never blows so red. The rose is where some buried Caesar bled, that every hyacinth the garden wears, dropped in her lap from some once lovely head. Roman 20. And this reviving herb whose tender green fledges the river lip on which we lean. Ah, lean upon it lightly, for who knows, from what once lovely lip it springs unseen, Roman 21, ah, my beloved, fill the cup that clears, today of past regrets and future fears tomorrow, why tomorrow I may be, myself with yesterday's 7,000 years, Roman 22. For some we loved, the loveliest and the best, that from his vintage rolling time hath pressed, have drunk their cup a round or two before, and one by one crept silently to rest, Roman 23, and we that now make merry in the room they left and summer dresses in new bloom, ourselves must we beneath the couch of earth descend, ourselves to make a couch for whom, Roman 24, ah, make the most of what we yet may spend, before we too into the dust descend, dust into dust, and under dust to lie. Sans wine, sans song, sans singer, and sans end, Roman 25, alike for those who for today prepare, and those that after some tomorrow stare, a muezzin from the tower of darkness cries. Fools, your reward is neither here nor there. Roman 26. Why, all the saints and sages who discussed of the two worlds so wisely they are thrust, like foolish prophets forth, their words to scorn, are scattered, and their mouths are stopped with dust. Roman 27. Myself when young did eagerly frequent. Doctor and saint, and heard great argument, about it and about, but evermore, came out by the same door wherein I went. Roman 28. With them the seed of wisdom did I sow, and with mine own hand wrought to make it grow, and this was all the harvest that I reaped. I came like water, and like wind I go. Roman 29, into this universe, and why not knowing, nor whence, like water willy-nilly flowing, and out of it, as wind along the waste, I know not whither, willy-nilly blowing, XXX. What without asking, hither hurried whence, and without asking, whither hurried hence. Oh, many a cup of this forbidden wine must drown the memory of that insolence, Roman 31, up from earth's center through the seventh gate. I rose, and on the throne of Saturn sate, and many a knot unraveled by the road, but not the master knot of human fate. Roman 32, there was the door to which I found no key, there was the veil through which I might not see, some little talk a while of me and thee. There was, and then no more of thee and me. Roman 33, earth could not answer, nor the seas that mourn in flowing purple of their Lord forlorn, nor rolling heaven with all his signs revealed, and hidden by the sleeve of night and morn. Roman 34, then of the THE in me who works behind the veil, I lifted up my hands to find a lamp amid the darkness, and I heard, as from without, the me within thee blind. Roman 35, then to the lip of this poor earthen urn I leaned the secret of my life to learn, and lip to lip it murmured, while you live, drink, for once dead you never shall return. Roman 36, I think the vessel, that with fugitive articulation answered, once did live and drink, and ah, the passive lip I kissed, how many kisses might it take and give, Roman 37, for I remember stopping by the way, to watch a potter thumping his wet clay, and with its all-obliterated tongue, it murmured, gently, brother, gently pray. Roman 38, and has not such a story from of old, down man's successive generations rolled, of such a clod of saturated earth, cast by the maker into human mold, Roman 39, and not a drop that from our cups we throw, for earth to drink of but may steal below, to quench the fire of anguish in some eye, there hidden, far beneath and long ago, excel, as then the tulip for her morning sup, of heavenly vintage from the soil looks up, do you devoutly do the like till heaven. To earth invert you like an empty cup. Roman 41, perplexed no more with human or divine, tomorrow's tangle to the winds resign, and lose your fingers in the tresses of the cypress-slender minister of wine. Roman 42, and if the wine you drink, the lip you press, end in what all begins and ends in, yes, think then you are today what yesterday you were, tomorrow you shall not be less. Roman 43, so when that angel of the darker drink, at last shall find you by the river brink. And offering his cup, invite your soul, forth to your lips to quaff, you shall not shrink. Roman 44, why, if the soul can fling the dust aside, and naked on the air of heaven ride, were it not a shame for him, in this clay carcass crippled to abide. Roman 45, tease but a tent where takes his one day's rest. A sultan to the realm of death addressed, the sultan rises and the dark farash strikes and prepares it for another guest. Roman 46. And fear not lest existence closing your account and mine should know the like no more, the eternal sake from that bowl has poured. Millions of bubbles like us and will pour. Roman 47. When you and I behind the veil are past. Oh, but the long, long while the world shall last, which of our coming and departure heeds, as the sea's self should heed a pebble cast. Roman 48. A moment's halt, a momentary taste of being from the well amid the waste, and lo, the phantom caravan has reached the nothing it set out from. Oh, make haste. Roman 49. Would you that spangle of existence spend about the secret? Quick about it, friend. A hair perhaps divides the false from true, and upon what, prithee, may life depend? L a hair perhaps divides the false and true, yes, and a single aleph were the clue. Could you but find it to the treasure house, and peradventure to the master too, lie whose secret presence through creation's veins, running quicksilver-like, eludes your pains, taking all shapes from ma to mahi, and they change and perish all, but he remains, let a moment guest, then back behind the fold, immersed of darkness round the drama rolled, which, for the pastime of eternity, he doth himself contrive, and act, behold, li'i. But if in vain, down on the stubborn floor of earth, and up to heaven's unopening door, you gaze today, while you are you, how then? Tomorrow, when you shall be you no more, live. Waste not your hour, nor in the vain pursuit of this and that endeavor and dispute. Better be jocund with the fruitful grape than sadden after none or bitter fruit. LV, you know, my friends, with what a brave carouse I made a second marriage in my house, divorced old barren reason from my bed, and took the daughter of the vine to spouse. LVI, for is and is not, though with rule and line, and a pan D-O-W-N by logic I define. Of all that one should care to fathom, I was never deep in anything but wine. Elvia, ah, by my computations, people say, reduce the year to better reckoning. Nay, 'twas only striking from the calendar, unborn tomorrow and dead yesterday. Elvi, and lately, by the tavern door agape, came shining through the dusk an angel shape, bearing a vessel on his shoulder, and he bid me taste of it, and 'twas the grape, licks, the grape that can with logic absolute the 270 jarring sex confute, the sovereign alchemist that in a trice life's leaden metal into gold transmute. LX, the mighty Mahmud, Allah-breathing Lord, that all the misbelieving and black horde of fears and sorrows that infest the soul scatters before him with his whirlwind sword. LXI, why be this juice the growth of God, who dare blaspheme the twisted tendril as a snare? A blessing, we should use it, should we not? And if a curse, why then, who set it there? LXI, I must abjure the balm of life, I must, scared by some after-reckoning tan on trust, or lured with hope of some diviner drink, to fill the cup when crumbled into dust. LZI, of threats of hell and hopes of paradise, one thing at least is certain, this life flies, one thing is certain, and the rest is lies, the flower that once has blown forever dies. LZIV, strange, is it not, that of the myriads who, before us pass the door of darkness through, not one returns to tell us of the road which to discover we must travel to. LXV, the revelations of devout and learned, who rose before us and as prophets burned, are all but stories which awoke from sleep, they told their comrades and to sleep returned. LXVI, I sent my soul through the invisible, some letter of that afterlife to spell, and by my soul returned to me, and answered, I myself am heaven and hell. LXVI, heaven but the vision of fulfilled desire, and hell the shadow from a soul on fire. Cast on the darkness into which ourselves, so late emerged from, shall so soon expire. LXVI, we are no other than a moving row of magic shadow shapes that come and go, round with the sun-illumined lantern held in midnight by the master of the show, Elzix, but helpless pieces of the game he plays. Upon this checkerboard of nights and days, hither and thither moves and checks and slays, and one by one back in the closet lays. LXX, The ball no question makes of eyes and nose. But here or there as strikes the player goes, and he that tossed you down into the field. He knows about it all, he knows, LXXI, the moving finger writes, and having writ, moves on, nor all your piety nor wit, shall lure it back to cancel half a line, nor all your tears wash out a word of it, LXXI, and that inverted bowl they call the sky, whereunder crawling cooped we live and die. Lift not your hands to it for help for it, as impotently moves as you or I, LXCI. With earth's first clay they did the last man knead, and there of the last harvest sowed the seed, and the first morning of creation wrote, what the last dawn of reckoning shall read, LXIV. Yesterday this day's madness did prepare, tomorrow silence, triumph, or despair drink. For you not know whence you came, nor why drink. For you know not why you go, nor where, LXXV, I tell you this, when started from the goal, over the flaming shoulders of the foal, of Heaven Parwin and Mushtari they flung. In my predestined plot of dust and soul, LXXVI, the vine had struck a fiber, which about, if clings my being, let the dervish flout of my base metal may be filed a key, that shall unlock the door he howls without, LXXVI, and this I know, whether the one true light, kindle to love or wrath consume me quite, one flash of it within the tavern caught, better than in the temple lost outright, LXXVI, what, out of senseless nothing to provoke, a conscious something to resent the yoke, of unpermitted pleasure under pain of everlasting penalties if broke LX6, what, from his helpless creature be repaid, pure gold for what he lent him dross allayed. Sue for a debt he never did contract, and cannot answer, O the sorry trade LXXX. O thou who didst with pitfall and with gin, beset the road I was to wander in, thou wilt not with predestined evil round, and mesh, and then impute my fall to sin, LXXXI, O thou who man of baser earth didst make. And even with paradise devise the snake, for all the sin wherewith the face of man is blackened, man's forgiveness give, and take LXXA, as under cover of departing day, slunk hunger-stricken remazen away, once more within the potter's house alone, I stood, surrounded by the shapes of clay, LXXCI, shapes of all sorts and sizes, great and small, that stood along the floor and by the wall and some loquacious vessels were, and some, listened perhaps, but never talked at all, LXXIV. Said one among them, surely not in vain, my substance of the common earth was tan, and to this figure molded to be broke or trampled back to shapeless earth again. LXXXV, then said a second, ne'er a peevish boy would break the bowl from which he drank in joy, and he that with his hand the vessel made will surely not in after wrath destroy. LXXXVI, after a momentary silence spake, some vessel of a more ungainly make, they sneer at me for leaning all awry, what? Did the hand then of the potter shake? LXXXVI, were it some one of the loquacious lot, I think a Sufi pipkin waxing hot. All this of pot and potter, tell me then, who is the potter, pray, and who the pot? LXXXVI. Why, said another, some there are who tell of one who threatens he will toss to hell. The luckless pots he marred in making, pish, he's a good fellow, and twill all be well. LXX6. Well, murmured one, let whoso make or buy. My clay with long oblivion is gone dry, but fill me with the old familiar juice. Methinks I might recover by and by. XC, so while the vessels one by one were speaking, the little moon looked in that all were seeking, and then they jogged each other, brother. Brother, now for the porter's shoulders not a creaking. XCI, ah, with the grape my fading life provide, and wash the body whence the life has died, and lay me, shrouded in the living leaf, by some not unfrequented garden side. XCI. That even buried ash is such a snare, a vintage shall fling up into the air, as not a true believer passing by, but shall be overtaken unaware. XCI. Indeed the idols I have loved so long have done my credit in this world much wrong, have drowned my glory in a shallow cup, and sold my reputation for a song, XIV. Indeed, indeed, repentance oft before, I swore. But was I sober when I swore, and then came spring, and rose in hand. My threadbare penitence a pieces tore, XCV. And much as wine has played the infidel, and robbed me of my robe of honor, well, I wonder often what the vintners buy, one half so precious as the stuff they sell, XCVI. Yet ah, that spring should vanish with the rose, that youth's sweet-scented manuscript should close, the nightingale that in the branches sang, ah whence and whither flown again, who knows, XCVI, would but the desert of the fountain yield, one glimpse, if dimly, yet indeed, revealed, to which the fainting traveler might spring. As springs the trampled herbage of the field, XCVI, would but some winged angel ere too late, arrest the yet unfolded roll of fate, and make the stern recorder otherwise, and register or quite obliterate X6. Ah, love, could you and I with him conspire to grasp this sorry scheme of things entire, Would not we shatter it to bits and then remold it nearer to the heart's desire? See yon rising moon that looks for us again. How oft hereafter will she wax and wane, how oft hereafter rising look for us, through this same garden and for one in vain, sigh. And when like her, O Saki, you shall pass among the guests star-scattered on the grass, and in your joyous errand reach the spot where I made one turn down an empty glass, tamam. Notes. The references are, except in the first note only, to the stanzas of the fifth edition. Stanza I, flinging a stone into the cup was the signal for to horse, in the desert. Aye. The false dawn, subhi kazib, a transient light on the horizon, about an hour before the subhi sadik or true dawn, a well-known phenomenon in the east. IV. New year. Beginning with the vernal equinox, it must be remembered, and, howsoever the old solar year is practically superseded by the clumsy lunar year that dates from the Mohammedan Hijra, still commemorated by a festival that is said to have been appointed by the very Jamshid whom Omar so often talks of, and whose yearly calendar he helped to rectify. The sudden approach and rapid advance of the spring, says Mr. Binning, are very striking. Before the snow is well off the ground, the trees burst into blossom and the flowers start from the soil. At Nowruz, their New Year's Day, the snow was lying in patches on the hills and in the shaded valleys, while the fruit trees in the garden were budding beautifully, and green plants and flowers springing upon the plains on every side, and on old Hyam's chin and icy crown, an odorous chaplet of sweet summer buds is, as in mockery, set. Among the plants newly appeared, I recognized some acquaintances I had not seen for many a year. Among these, two varieties of the thistle, a coarse species of the daisy like the horsegowan, red and white clover, the dock, the blue cornflower, and that vulgar herb the dandelion, rearing its yellow crest on the banks of the watercourses. The nightingale was not yet heard, for the rose was not yet blown, but an almost identical blackbird and woodpecker helped to make up something of a north country spring, the white hand of Moses. Exodus Roman 4, 6, where Moses draws forth his hand not, according to the Persians, leprous as snow, but white as our May blossom in spring perhaps. According to them also the healing power of Jesus resided in his breath. V. Aram, planted by King Shaddad and now sunk somewhere in the sands of Arabia. Jamshid's seven-ringed cup was typical of the seven heavens, seven planets, seven seas, and sea, and was a divining cup. V.I. Pahlavi, the old heroic Sanskrit of Persia. Hafez also speaks of the nightingale's Pahlavi, which did not change with the peoples. I am not sure if the fourth line refers to the red rose looking sickly, or to the yellow rose that ought to be red, red, white, and yellow roses all, common in Persia. I think that Southey in his commonplace book quotes from some Spanish author about the rose being white till 10 o'clock, rosa perfecta at 2, and perfecta incarnata at 5. X, Rustum, the Hercules of Persia, and Zal his father, whose exploits are among the most celebrated in the Shahnameh. Hatim Tai, a well-known type of Oriental generosity. XIII, a drum beaten outside a palace. XIV, that is the rose's golden center. XVII, Persepolis, called also Taktai Jamshid, the throne of Jamshid, King Splendid, of the mythical Peshtadian dynasty, and supposed, according to the Shahnameh, to have been founded and built by him. Others refer it to the work of the genie king, Jan ibn Jan, who also built the pyramids before the time of Adam Baram-Gur. Baram of the Wild Ass, a Sasanian sovereign, had also his seven castles like the king of Bohemia, each of a different color, each with a royal mistress within, each of whom tells him a story, as told in one of the most famous poems of Persia, written by Amir Khusra. All these sevens also figuring, according to Eastern mysticism, the seven heavens, and perhaps the book itself, that eighth, into which the mystical seven transcend and within which they revolve. The ruins of three of those towers are yet shown by the peasantry, as also the swamp in which Baram sunk like the master of Ravenswood while pursuing his gore, the palace that to heave his pillars through, and kings the forehead on his threshold drew. I saw the solitary ringdev there, and coo, 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 she cried, and coo, coo, coo. Included in Nicholas's edition as number 350 of the Rubaiyat, and also in Mr. Winfield's translation. This quatrain Mr. Binning found, among several of Hafez and others, inscribed by some stray hand among the ruins of Persepolis. The ringdevs, ancient Pahlavi ku ku ku, signifies also in Persian where. In Adar's bird parliament, she is reproved by the leader of the birds for sitting still and for ever harping on that one note of lamentation for her lost Yusuf, Apropos of Omar's red roses in Stanza Roma 19, I am reminded of an old English superstition that our anemone pulsatilla, or purple pasc flower, which grows plentifully about the Fleam Dyke near Cambridge, grows only where Danish blood has been spilt. XXI, 1,000 years to each planet. XXXI, Saturn, Lord of the Seventh Heaven. XXXII, Emianthi, some individual existence or personality distinct from the whole. XXXVII, one of the Persian poets, Adar, I think, has a pretty story about this. A thirsty traveler dips his hand into a spring of water to drink from. By and by comes another who draws up and drinks from an earthen bowl and then departs, leaving his bowl behind him. The first traveler takes it up for another draft, but is surprised to find that the same water which had tasted sweet from his own hand tastes bitter from the earthen bowl. But a voice from heaven, I think, tells him, the clay from which the bowl is made was once man, and into whatever shape renewed can never lose the bitter flavor of mortality. XXXIX. The custom of throwing a little wine on the ground before drinking still continues in Persia, and perhaps generally in the East, Mons. Nicholas considers it unseen de liberalite, et en meme temps un avertisement quellebuvor doit viter sacup jusquela dernier gout. Is it not more likely an ancient superstition, a libation to propitiate earth or make her an accomplice in the illicit revel? Or, perhaps to divert the jealous eye by some sacrifice of superfluity, as with the ancients of the West? With Omar, we see something more is signified. The precious liquor is not lost, but sinks into the ground to refresh the dust of some poor wine worshipper forgone. Thus Hafez, copying Omar in so many ways. When thou drinkest wine, pour a draft on the ground. Wherefore fear the sin which brings to another gain? XLAI. According to one beautiful Oriental legend, Azrael accomplishes his mission by holding to the nostril an apple from the tree of life. This and the two following stanzas would have been withdrawn as somewhat de trop from the text, but for advice which I least like to disregard. Li. From Ma to Mahai, from fish to moon. Lvi. A jest, of course, at his studies. A curious mathematical quatrain. Of Omar's has been pointed out to me, the more curious because almost exactly paralleled by some verses of Dr. Don's that are quoted in Isaac Walton's Lives. Here is Omar. You and I are the image of a pair of compasses, though we have two heads, sc. Our feet, we have one body. When we have fixed the center for our circle, we bring our heads, sc. Feet together at the end. Dr. Don. If we be two, we two are so. As stiff twin compasses are two, thy soul, the fixed foot makes no show, to move but does if the other do, and though thine in the center sit, yet when my other far does roam, thine leans and hearkens after it, and rows erect as mine comes home. Such thou must be to me, who must, like the other foot obliquely run, thy firmness makes my circle just, and me to end where I begun. Lix. The 72 religions supposed to divide the world, including Islamism, as some think, but others not. Lx. Alluding to Sultan Mahmud's conquest of India and its dark people. Lxvii. Fanusi keel, a magic lanthorn still used in India, the cylindrical interior being painted with various figures and so lightly poised and ventilated as to revolve round the lighted candle within. LXX. A very mysterious line in the original, O Danad, O Danad, O Danad, O, breaking off something like our wood pigeon's note, which she is said to take up just where she left off. LXXV. Parwin and Mushtari, the Pleiades and Jupiter. LXXXVII. This relation of pot and potter to man and his maker figures, far and wide in the literature of the world from the time of the Hebrew prophets to the present, when it may finally take the name of pot, theism, by which Mr. Carlyle ridiculed Sterling's pantheism. My sheik, whose knowledge flows in from all quarters, writes to me, apropos of old Omar's pots, did I ever tell you the sentence I found in Bishop Pearson on the Creed? Thus are we wholly at the disposal of his will, and our present and future condition framed and ordered by his free, but wise and just decrees. Hath not the potter power over the clay of the same lump to make one vessel unto honor and another unto dishonor? Rome, Roman 9. 21. And can that earth artificer have a freer power over his brother potsherd, both being made of the same metal, than God hath over him, who, by the strange fecundity of his omnipotent power, first made the clay out of nothing and then him out of that? And again, from a very different quarter, I had to refer the other day to Aristophanes and came by chance on a curious speaking pot story in the Vespi, which I had quite forgot. Greek text deleted from edext. The pot calls a bystander to be a witness to his bad treatment. The woman says, if by Proserpine instead of all this testifying, comp, Cuddy and his mother in old mortality, You would buy yourself a rivet, it would show more sense in you. The scholiast explains echinus as Greek, phrase deleted from edext. One more illustration for the oddity's sake from the autobiography of A. Cornish Rector by the late James Hamley Tregenna, 1871. There was one odd fellow in our company, he was so like a figure in the Pilgrim's Progress that Richard always called him the allegory, with a long white beard, a rare appendage in those days, and a face the color of which seemed to have been baked in like the faces one used to see on earthenware jugs. In our country dialect, earthenware is called clome, so the boys of the village used to shout out after him, "Go, back to the potter, old clome face, and get baked over again." For the allegory, though shrewd enough in most things, had the reputation of being safed baked, i.e. of weak intellect. XC. At the close of the fasting month, Ramazan, which makes the Musulman unhealthy and unamiable, the first glimpse of the new moon, who rules their division of the year, is looked for with the utmost anxiety, and hailed with acclamation. Then it is that the porter's knot may be heard toward the cellar. Omar has elsewhere a pretty quatrain about the same moon. Be of good cheer, the sullen month will die, and a young moon requite us by and by. Look how the old one, meager, bent, and wan, with age and fast, is fainting from the sky. End of the project. GUTMBRG, EBOOK, the RUBAIYT of OMARKHAYYAM asterisk. Updated editions will replace the previous one. The old editions will be renamed. Creating the works from print editions not protected by U.S. copyright. Law means that no one owns a United States copyright in these works, so the foundation and you can copy and distribute it in the United States without permission and without paying copyright royalties. Special rules, set forth in the general terms of use part of this license, apply to copying and distributing project Gutenberg trademark electronic works to protect the project GUTMBRGTM. Concept and trademark. Project Gutenberg is a registered trademark and may not be used if you charge for an ebook, except by following the terms of the trademark license, including paying royalties for use of the Project Gutenberg trademark. If you do not charge anything for copies of this ebook, complying with the trademark license is very easy. You may use this ebook for nearly any purpose, such as creation of derivative works, reports, performances, and research. Project Gutenberg ebooks may be modified and printed and given away. You may do practically anything in the United States with ebooks not protected by U.S. copyright law. Redistribution is subject to the trademark license, especially commercial redistribution. Start. Full license. The full project GUTMBRGTM license. Please read this before you distribute or use this work to protect the Project Gutenberg trademark mission of promoting the free distribution of electronic works by using or distributing this work or any other work associated in any way with the phrase Project Gutenberg. You agree to comply with all the terms of the full Project Gutenberg license available with this file or online at www.gutenberg.org/license. Section 1. General Terms of Use and Redistributing Project Gutenberg Electronic Works. 1A. By reading or using any part of this Project Gutenberg electronic work, you indicate that you have read, understand, agree to, and accept all the terms of this license and intellectual property trademark copyright agreement. If you do not agree to abide by all the terms of this agreement, you must cease using and return or destroy all copies of Project Gutenberg electronic works in your possession. If you paid a fee for obtaining a copy of or access to a Project Gutenberg electronic work and you do not agree to be bound by the terms of this agreement, you may obtain a refund from the person or entity to whom you paid the fee as set forth in paragraph 1E8, 1B. Project Gutenberg is a registered trademark. It may only be used on or associated in any way with an electronic work by people who agree to be bound by the terms of this agreement. There are a few things that you can do with most Project Gutenberg electronic works, even without complying with the full terms of this agreement. C. Paragraph 1C below. There are a lot of things you can do with Project Gutenberg electronic works if you follow the terms of this agreement and help preserve free future access to Project Gutenberg electronic works. See paragraph 1E below, 1C. The Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation, the Foundation, or PGLAF, owns a compilation copyright in the collection of Project Gutenberg electronic works. Nearly all the individual works in the collection are in the public domain in the United States. If an individual work is unprotected by copyright law in the United States and you are located in the United States, We do not claim a right to prevent you from copying, distributing, performing, displaying, or creating derivative works based on the work as long as all references to Project Gutenberg are removed. Of course, we hope that you will support the Project Gutenberg mission of promoting free access to electronic works by freely sharing Project Gutenberg works in compliance with the terms of this agreement for keeping the Project Gutenberg name associated with the work. You can easily comply with the terms of this agreement by keeping this work in the same format with its attached full Project Gutenberg license when you share it without charge with others. 1D. The copyright laws of the place where you are located also govern what you can do with this work. Copyright laws in most countries are in a constant state of change. If you are outside the United States, check the laws of your country in addition to the terms of this agreement before downloading, copying, displaying, performing, distributing, or creating derivative works based on this work or any other Project Gutenberg work. The Foundation makes no representations concerning the copyright status of any work in any country other than the United States. 1E. Unless you have removed all references to Project Gutenberg, 1E1, the following sentence with active links to or other immediate access to the full Project Gutenberg license must appear prominently whenever any copy of a Project Gutenberg work, any work on which the phrase Project Gutenberg appears or with which the phrase Project Gutenberg is associated is accessed, displayed, performed, viewed, copied, or distributed. This ebook is for the use of anyone anywhere in the United States and most other parts of the world at no cost and with almost no restrictions whatsoever. You may copy it, give it away, or reuse it under the terms of the Project Gutenberg trademark license included with this ebook or online at www.gutenberg.org. If you are not located in the United States, you will have to check the laws of the country where you are located before using this ebook. 1E2. If an individual Project Gutenberg electronic work is derived from texts not protected by U.S. copyright law, does not contain a notice indicating that it is posted with permission of the copyright holder, the work can be copied and distributed to anyone in the United States without paying any fees or charges. If you are redistributing or providing access to a work with the phrase Project Gutenberg associated with or appearing on the work, you must comply either with the requirements of paragraphs 1E1 through 1E7 or obtain permission for the use of the work and the Project Gutenberg trademark as set forth in paragraphs 1E8 or 1E9. 1E3. If an individual Project Gutenberg electronic work is posted, with the permission of the copyright holder, your use and distribution must comply with both paragraphs 1E1 through 1E7 and any additional terms imposed by the copyright holder. Additional terms will be linked to the Project Gutenberg license for all works posted with the permission of the copyright holder found at the beginning of this work. 1E4. Do not unlink or detach or remove the full Project Gutenberg license terms from this work or any files containing a part of this work or any other work associated with Project Gutenberg. 1E5. Do not copy, display, perform, distribute, or redistribute this electronic work or any part of this electronic work without prominently displaying the sentence set forth in paragraph 1E1 with active links or immediate access to the full terms of the Project Gutenberg license. 1E6. You may convert to and distribute this work in any binary, compressed, marked up, non-proprietary or proprietary form, including any word processing or hypertext form. However, if you provide access to or distribute copies of a Project Gutenberg work in a format other than plain vanilla ASCII or other format used in the official version posted on the official Project Gutenberg website, www.gutenberg.org, you must, at no additional cost, fee, or expense to the user, provide a copy, a means of exporting a copy, or a means of obtaining a copy upon request of the work in its original plain vanilla ASCII or other form. Any alternate format must include the full Project Gutenberg license as specified in paragraph 1E1, 1E7. Do not charge a fee for access to viewing, displaying, performing, copying, or distributing any Project Gutenberg works, unless you comply with paragraph 1E8 or 1E9. 1E8. You may charge a reasonable fee for copies of or providing access to or distributing Project Gutenberg electronic works, provided that you pay a royalty fee of 20% of the gross profits you derive from the use of Project Gutenberg works calculated using the method you already use to calculate your applicable taxes. The fee is owed to the owner of the Project Gutenberg trademark, but he has agreed to donate royalties under this paragraph to the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation. Royalty payments must be paid within 60 days following each date on which you prepare or are legally required to prepare your periodic tax returns. Royalty payments should be clearly marked as such and sent to the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation at the address specified in Section 4, Information about donations to the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation. You provide a full refund of any money paid by a user who notifies you in writing or by email within 30 days of receipt that he does not agree to the terms of the full Project Gutenberg trademark license. You must require such a user to return or destroy all copies of the works possessed in a physical medium and discontinue all use of and all access to other copies of Project Gutenberg trademark works. You provide, in accordance with paragraph 1F3, a full refund of any money paid for a work or a replacement copy if a defect in the electronic work is discovered and reported to you within 90 days of receipt of the work. You comply with all other terms of this agreement for free distribution of Project Gutenberg trademark works. 1E9. If you wish to charge a fee or distribute a Project Gutenberg trademark electronic work or group of works on different terms than are set forth in this agreement, you must obtain permission in writing from the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation, the manager of the Project Gutenberg trademark. Contact the foundation as set forth in Section 3 below, 1F1F1. Project Gutenberg volunteers and employees expend considerable effort to identify, do copyright research on, transcribe, and proofread works not protected by U.S. copyright law in creating the Project Gutenberg trademark collection. Despite these efforts, Project Gutenberg trademark electronic works and the medium on which they may be stored may contain defects, such as, but not limited to, incomplete, inaccurate, or corrupt data, transcription errors, a copyright or other intellectual property infringement, a defective or damaged disk or other medium, a computer virus or computer codes that damage or cannot be read by your equipment. 1F2. Limited warranty disclaimer of damages, except for the right of replacement or refund described in paragraph 1F3, the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation, the owner of the Project Gutenberg trademark, and any other party distributing a Project Gutenberg trademark electronic work under this agreement, disclaim all liability to you for damages, costs, and expenses, including legal fees. You agree that you have no remedies for negligence, strict liability, breach of warranty, or breach of contract, except those provided in paragraph 1F3. You agree that the foundation, trademark owner, and any distributor under this agreement will not be liable to you for actual, direct, indirect, consequential, punitive, or incidental damages, even if you give notice of the possibility of such damage. 1F3. Limited right of replacement or refund. If you discover a defect in this electronic work within 90 days of receiving it, you can receive a refund of the money, if any, you paid for it by sending a written explanation to the person you received the work from. If you receive the work on a physical medium, you must return the medium with your written explanation. The person or entity that provided you with the defective work may elect to provide a replacement copy in lieu of a refund. If you receive the work electronically, the person or entity providing it to you may choose to give you a second opportunity to receive the work electronically in lieu of a refund. If the second copy is also defective, you may demand a refund in writing without further opportunities to fix the problem. 1F4. Except for the limited right of replacement or refund set forth in paragraph 1F3, this work is provided to you as is with no other warranties of any kind, express or implied, including but not limited to warranties of MERC Chantibility or fitness for any purpose. 1F5. Some states do not allow disclaimers of certain implied warranties or the exclusion or limitation of certain types of damages. If any disclaimer or limitation set forth in this agreement violates the law of the state applicable to this agreement, the agreement shall be interpreted to make the maximum disclaimer or limitation permitted by the applicable state law. The invalidity or unenforceability of any provision of this agreement shall not void the remaining provisions. 1F6. Indemnity. You agree to indemnify and hold the foundation, the trademark owner, any agent or employee of the foundation, anyone. Providing copies of Project Gutenberg trademark electronic works in accordance with this agreement, and any volunteers associated with the production, promotion, and distribution of Project Gutenberg trademark electronic works, harmless from all liability, costs, and expenses, including legal fees that arise directly or indirectly from any of the following which you do or cause to occur. A distribution of this or any Project Gutenberg work, B, alteration, modification, or additions or deletions to any Project Gutenberg work, and C, any defect you cause, Section 2. Information about the mission of Project Gutenberg. Project Gutenberg is synonymous with the free distribution of electronic works in formats readable by the widest variety of computers, including obsolete, old, middle-aged, and new computers. It exists because of the efforts of hundreds of volunteers and donations from people in all walks of life. Volunteers and financial support to provide volunteers with the assistance they need are critical to reaching Project Gutenberg goals and ensuring that the Project Gutenberg collection will remain freely available for generations to come. In 2001, the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation was created to provide a secure and permanent future for Project Gutenberg and future generations. To learn more about the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation and how your efforts and donations can help, see Sections 3 and 4 and the Foundation Information page at www.gutenberg.org, Section 3. Information about the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation. The Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation is a nonprofit 501(c)(3) educational corporation organized under the laws of the state of Mississippi and granted tax exempt status by the Internal Revenue Service. The foundation's EIN or federal tax identification number is 64622-1541. Contributions to the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation are tax deductible to the full extent permitted by U.S. federal laws and your state's laws. The foundation's business office is located at 41 Watchung Plaza 516, Montclair NJ 7042, USA, +1-862-621-9288. Email contact links and up-to-date contact information can be found at the foundation's website and official page at www.gutenberg.org/contact, Section 4. Information about donations to the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation. Project Gutenberg trademark depends upon and cannot survive without widespread public support and donations to carry out its mission of increasing the number of public domain and licensed works that can be freely distributed in machine-readable form accessible by the widest array of equipment, including outdated equipment. Many small donations, $1 to $5,000, are particularly important to maintaining tax-exempt status with the IRS. The foundation is committed to complying with the laws regulating charities and charitable donations in all 50 states of the United States. Compliance requirements are not uniform, and it takes a considerable effort, much paperwork, and many fees to meet and keep up with these requirements. We do not solicit donations in locations where we have not received written confirmation of compliance. To send donations or determine the status of compliance for any particular state, visit www.gutenberg.org/donate. While we cannot and do not solicit contributions from states where we have not met the solicitation requirements, we know of no prohibition against accepting unsolicited donations from donors in such states who approach us with offers to donate. International donations are gratefully accepted, but we cannot make any statements concerning tax treatment of donations received from outside the United States. U.S. laws alone swamp our small staff. Please check the Project Gutenberg web pages for current donation methods and addresses. Donations are accepted in a number of other ways, including checks, online payments, and credit card donations. To donate, please visit www.gutenberg.org/donate, Section 5. General information about Project Gutenberg Electronic Works. Professor Michael S. Hart was the originator of the Project Gutenberg concept of a library of electronic works that could be freely shared with anyone. For 40 years, he produced and distributed Project Gutenberg ebooks with only a loose network of volunteer support. Project Gutenberg ebooks are often created from several printed editions, all of which are confirmed as not protected by copyright in the US unless a copyright notice is included. Thus, we do not necessarily keep ebooks in compliance with any particular paper. Edition, most people start at our website, which has the main PG search facility, www.gutenberg.org. This website includes information about Project Gutenberg, including how to make donations to the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation, how to help produce our new ebooks, and how to subscribe to our email newsletter to hear about new ebooks. This is the end of the audiobook. Thank you for listening. You can listen to and download more audiobooks at threeords.com.